Tigris, the Armenian Genocide and America's Response. Anahid Kachian, thank you for joining us, whose father was a survivor of the 1915 Armenian Genocide. She's interviewed scores of survivors in the United States. And Simon Magakian, lecturer in political science at the University of Colorado, activist with Armenians of Colorado. That does it for our broadcast. Monday through Wednesday, we'll be broadcasting from The Hague, so do tune in. Special thanks to our crew here in Denver at the Open Media Foundation, Anne Thies and Tony Shawcross and Gvane Dahl, Shannon Altner, Nicole Marquez, Ivy Farr, Dana Thibault, Dennis Moynihan, and Julie Crosby. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Aaron Mate, Nermeen Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff, Hani Masood, Robbie Karen, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Anna Uzbek, Sam Riddell, Miguel Nogueira, and Flip, our engineers. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn. And now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding area. My name is Jay Koronek, station advisor here at WHFR. Thank you for tuning in today. Boy, have we got a lot of stories. It's my catch-up day. No mustard, though. Yeah, it's doing stories that we weren't able to do because we had big interviews in the past couple weeks. Last week, of course, it was John B. O'Reilly Jr., the current mayor of City of Dearborn. And that was a spirited and information-packed hour. And so if you missed it, you need to go to our website, whfr.fm, click on Talk Shows, click on WHFR Journal, and select the date from last week, which was the 17th. Okay, April 17th. You'll hear all the comments from the mayor. He was talking about giving us some details about questions I had on the State of the City address, as well as some recent issues that were in the news. And also commenting about Proposal 1. We have a story that connects with that, too. Also joining me in the studio is our news director, returning back to the airwaves here, John Conroy. Welcome back, John.
Well, thank you, Jay, and you may not use mustard, but I'm sure our listeners will relish our stories.
Oh, I love it, John. You're being influenced by proximity here. If he's in the same room with a punster, he's bound to be infected, I guess. Okay. We do want to thank everyone for all their pledges last week. If you did not give us your credit card number on your pledges, then we're sending an envelope sometime shortly. If you haven't already received it, you will, in which you can put your check or your money order. If you haven't already pledged, my goodness, we're not at our pledge expectation. That's not bad news. We know there's still pledges coming in. We had donation letters sent out. If you got one of those, now's the time to return it. We don't want to get scared here. We don't want to have more than one pledge drive on the air per year. We've been able to get by with just that and the kindness of strangers, our loyal listeners, who are really not strangers. Right? There's so many great friends there. So many of them made it. About a fourth, in fact, of the great crowd we had for the WHFR 30th anniversary gala last week, Saturday night, were our loyal listeners. And thank you for coming out there. You know, a portion of that ticket, $50 a person it was, but, oh, great food, great entertainment. John thought so.
It was a great day that I was absent.
Right. Yeah, I know. I know. John had some other things he had to do. So, but he loves food. So I want to make him really feel bad that he didn't have the great food. The highlights, John. This is going to really torture you here.
Okay.
Is that they had a baked chicken that had a great sort of Italian breading on it. So it wasn't too greasy, if you don't like greasy chicken, you know, but it was delicious and moist. Everybody said so. Many people who love chicken had several helpings of that. There was a mustacholi, Italian mustacholi for vegetarians out there, no meat sauce on it, and also Swedish meatballs, which is sort of a cream sauce, a very delicate cream sauce, too. It was none of that Campbell's tomato, you know, Campbell's mushroom soup sauce, which is popular in many homes. But it was really wonderful. And vegetables, there was a platter of mixed vegetables we ordered, which is broccoli, cauliflower, and carrots, but they were not overcooked. Usually it's all mushy. I think that's why a lot of people don't like vegetables, because they're not cooked properly. They're overcooked. And so it's all just mush and, you know, there's no taste. This was tasteful and a little bit al dente. I think you'd say that about pasta, don't you? A little bit uncooked, just enough to make it crispy and delicious, but heated, warmed. That was lovely. And of the salads, there was a great mixed bean salad for those that like, you know, mixed beans. And also a Michigan salad. And that's in honor of Michigan, of course. Mm. It's got a few cranberries and walnuts and different kinds of lettuce in there. And that was really delicious, too. So we thank Park Place for helping us out there. They did give us a great price, but as I was saying, those ticket prices, if you did buy tickets and you were part of people that went there, remember the $20 out of the $50 of each ticket you can deduct on your income tax if you deduct money on your income tax. And if you give a lot of donations or things to different places, you know, and I think you can still deduct income tax on homes, too, on the mortgage of your house.
Yes.
Yeah, I think you still can. That, of course, especially if you're still doing that, you want to do it the deductions. We've got several stories about taxes. So there's four big stories we're going to hit after we hit the little stories over the last couple of weeks from the papers. And that is, it's still, as long as there's April, it is still Autism Awareness Month. I want to talk about that briefly. Armenian Genocide, at least I want to do a sort of semantic analysis. That's semantics, science of words, how you use them. Earth Day was this last Wednesday, and there's some interesting comments I found about that. And Tax Day. Usually we have a whole show once a year on the journal. Usually it's before Tax Day, but sometimes after, to sort of make people feel better, you know, or, you know, because they're very depressed that they had to pay money, or they're very exhausted because of everything they had to do at the last minute. So we'll have some tax day stories, too. A couple of alternatives to the current tax system should be considered. And we suggest that every year because WHFR Journal, we're here for local news about Dearborn and the surrounding area and alternative views. And we're serious about that. We're trying to get the ideas out there that you don't hear on the major media. And you decide, of course. You know, we're not saying one way or the other is better. But if you don't hear all the different possibilities, how can you make the best choices? And, of course, how can we forget Proposition 1? And there's actually a tie-in with Proposition 1 and Earth Day. Okay, yes. And that, of course, Proposal 1, excuse me. Is it called Proposition? I think it's called Proposal 1.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'll be May 5th, that's an election day. That's just a week from next Tuesday. Mm-hmm. May is creeping up fast here. April only has 30 days in it. Remember, 30 days hath up April, September, and something else. November? Anyway. So, vote. Or, guess what? Yes, if you're registered, you can do absentee ballot for that. Mm-hmm. And to my knowledge, in Dearborn, that's the only issue. There are some other communities around here. There might be something else doing. But it's a special election. The state is putting out $23 million or something like that, $23 million to have a special election because for some reason they don't want people to vote on it next fall, even though the roads won't get fixed for 3 years because they're paying off the debt of all the money they had to borrow at the state level to fix the roads in the past, which was stupid administrative move right at the outset. But nonetheless, we'll talk about Proposal 1 and Earth Day connection. But don't forget to vote. However you vote, try to find out what you can. Try to figure out what you think would be best. And let your legislators know. They're the ones that kicked it back to you. They couldn't make a decision themselves. And I thought that's what they were elected to do. That's what I thought. Could have saved us $23 million if they would have just figured this out last fall. And they could have started fixing the roads already, too. Okay. Well, anyway, moving on. So thank you for those pledges. And by the way, you can go online any time of the year because we need the money to stay on the air and pay our bills. We're the least expensive radio station in any urban area in this country because of all of our unpaid volunteers, such as John Conroy. Yay, John. Yes. And, you know, what can I say? We're well managed. The college does pay a couple of our bills, like for heat and light, and we get a small stipend, the same as the campus newspaper, for gosh sakes, the same as the theater department, the music department, from student service fees. So it's not out of student tuition. It's not out of the general fund. We get no money from federal, state, or local governments. So there, okay? And we got a really, really low budget for things that you can't hear anywhere else on your dial in Detroit or anywhere else on the internet, for that matter. All right. A couple of weeks ago, very important story for those of you gun lovers or gun haters or those who aren't so sure, and that is an update that was on, April 12th, Dearborn Press and Guide edition, Sunday, April 12th, all about a change in the concealed carry laws in Michigan and an overview story. And I don't know if you can still go on the website and find this. A lot of the stories on the Press and Guide website are deleted, or they're so far down that you won't scroll down on the page to find them. But what's happened is that the CPL, which is the Concealed Carry Law, what does the CPL stand for? Well, it's concealed carry. Concealed pistol licenses. Yep. It's concealed carry. Carry is assumed. So it's concealed pistol licenses, CPL. The process has been streamlined by new legislation that wipes out county gun boards. So it's just making it, speeding up the process and getting and having less money, less people involved. And the new law takes effect December 1st. So, however, the rules stay the same, and just since we brought this up here, since gun sales are going up and up, and it's interesting, as pointed out by the National Rifle Association, and they should know, that crimes with guns are going down, down, down. More CPL licenses in California than ever, and crimes with guns are at the lowest level ever. So, you know, in fact, if you look across the country, crimes in general are down, in general, almost everywhere, including Dearborn. Okay, Detroit is having some problems, but New York City is down, and we're talking about murder rates, we're talking about car theft rates, and so on. Things are better than ever. Of course, you couldn't tell it on TV, because they always lead with the crime stories, the worst possible ones, and if they don't have any locally, the local news will find them somewhere else in this country, or if they have to, they'll find a crime in a foreign country. And put, you ever think about that? How many out-of-state, and I mean in other states, or in other countries, are the stories in your so-called local news? I mean, they're not afraid to mix up the news. But I thought they were supposed to be local. Aren't there enough stories local? Oh, there's plenty of stories local. We fill an hour every Friday, and we could do more than that with just stories about Dearborn and the surrounding area. And some of these stories, this is a state story, of course, licensing CPLs in Michigan. But let me go over the rules in case you're thinking of buying a gun and then taking the next step and actually having a concealed carry, the legal license. Okay, you have to be at least 21 years old, a legal resident of the United States, and a resident for at least 6 months in the county where the person applies. Number two, successfully complete a handgun safety course. These are available. They're about 6 hours long. Gun shops know about when they're doing it. Some gun shops do it themselves. Sometimes they're at gun fairs, which are scary things. I've gone to a few of them in Michigan, usually a big convention center, and it's all full of gun vendors. Oh my gosh, big guns, little guns, ammunition, every size. It's, you know, you could start a war with just all the ammo and guns in one of these gun fairs. But anyway, nonetheless, they often offer frequently at these kinds of gun fairs the handgun safety course that's required as part of the CPL. And it's about 6 hours long. You can do it in one day. Some places you have to do it 2 hours a week for 3 weeks in a row or something, but you do it one day. There's a charge, of course, for that, and it varies. You can't have a felony criminal record, though, or pending criminal charges, and no convictions in recent years from among dozens of misdemeanor offenses. And I haven't reviewed that yet. I wonder if marijuana possession is one of those misdemeanor offenses that make it illegal for you to get a gun. One of them, I believe, because they just changed the law on this. In fact, it was you had a list of new bills that were proposed, but one of the laws changed recently, I believe, is that if there was an if you were under some sort of anti-stalking rule, in other words, somebody said you were stalking them, and the judge said, stay away from them, to you, then you could not get a handgun permit. But guess what? The person who filed the anti-stalking suit against you, he or she could get a handgun. Okay? So he or she who were being stalked could defend themselves, theoretically. But the person who's under the anti-stalking rule supposedly can't get the concealed carry permit.
Well, a little follow-up story on that is House Bill 4261. It's a ban open carry in concealed piston gun-free zones. And this is introduced by Representative Andy Schorr to ban open carry of firearms in gun-free zones specified in the state concealed pistol license law, which includes schools, daycare centers, stadiums, arenas.
What about bars?
Theaters, bars, yeah, churches, right. College dorms and classrooms, hospitals, casinos, and courts.
See, right now, open carry is legal almost everywhere in Michigan. A lot of people don't know that. there's always a question, and certainly the police will still come and question you extensively or escort you aside or take you away somewhere for questioning if you have a gun clearly visible, like in a holster at your side or something. Police are not totally well trained, but I think they always should. They feel like they should investigate why do you have that gun, even though it's legal to have open carry. Well, remember the question came up, well, open carry in the schools? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, there was a question about that in Ann Arbor Public Schools a couple of weeks ago, so I think this is in response to that. I'd like to believe that schools could be gun-free zones, but I happen to agree personally, and remember the opinions expressed on this show
yes.
are not necessarily, he's got to find it in his book, that's okay, are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford College, faculty, staff, administrators, or students, but we thank them for the right to express them. My opinion on that has been in the past, is that I agree with the NRA that schools should be gun-free zones, but that means the school has to have adequate defenses against people just walking in with guns. So they can't have an open door policy.
No.
They need guards or metal portals or something like that in order to protect the students in a gun-free zone. Now, maybe that's over-militarization of our society. Maybe that's part of what we fear. We don't want every safe place like churches and so on to have metal detectors and guard station. But
with the amount of schools that have been attacked in the last few years,
remember, and we're part of the media here, the media takes one incident and makes it a national issue for weeks and weeks. Okay, a couple hundred people have died, but it's tragic. Could something have been done? No, or it probably would have been done in those situations. I mean, we'd have to change, for example, the schools to make them all gun-free and safe from guns. Think of the investment in dollars give a lot of employment to security guards and those companies that make the metal detectors, you know. But you can't, and it's interesting that a security issue like a bond, along with technology too, other technology, learning technology, went down to defeat in Dearborn Heights just a month or so ago. Mm-hmm. And you would think if that was, maybe they tossed it in there as a key way to sell the educational improvements. Education technology. So, well, people vote for it when they see it's going to make the schools safer with those metal detectors. You know, no security guards were mentioned, but metal detectors, and it still went down. So, of course, it's a higher tax. People don't want more money spent to have to be spent, and so maybe it went down just for the simplest of reasons. It's hard to say, of course. So, I just wanted to say that it will be streamlined. I think that's the right thing to do. There was a lot of conflicts between, especially the Wayne County Clerk's Office and the state of Michigan. Okay, so you still have to, by the way, get the application and from the Wayne County Clerk's Office even after December 1st. But it's just going to streamline the whole thing without duplication, and just it's just making it better. Am I in favor of that? I'm not going to say. I think it's your right, as I interpret the Constitution of the United States of America, to own a weapon, not a nuclear bomb, but, you know, certainly handguns, rifles, probably. And we still have to work on this as a society. But the simple fact has been, folks, that crime is on a decline, which means you really need to buy a gun. But number two, weapon sales have been up and up. And I'm not saying there's a direct connection there. But before you consider a weapon, consider all kinds of training. And right now, unfortunately, in Michigan, this is the bad thing about the state of Michigan, there's no safety training class required before you get a gun. Only required, and only 6 hours, before you get the concealed pistol license, the concealed carry permission license. And I think that's great to include that. Why not for everyone? I mean, you can go into a gun shop. Okay, you have to fill out a federal firearms registration form now. Okay, you have to be licensed with the Fed, not licensed. You have to, all your information goes to the federal government, and they check the database for criminal behavior that way now. So that's standardized now. That's everybody has to fill that out for a handgun, and I think for a rifle too. Not sure about that one, but certainly for a handgun, wherever you buy it. But you could be deaf, dumb, and blind, excuse me, as long as you could sign your name and give them your credit card. You could buy the gun and ammunition. And I'm not saying the blind couldn't be taught how to shoot and shouldn't own a gun. That's a specialized case, and that's a long argument. But I'm just saying that shouldn't there be some required safety courses? Hmm. I mean, how to properly load the gun, how to maintain the gun, clean the gun, because if it's not clean, it'll misfire and kill the wrong person, maybe kill you. How do you secure it? What are the options? And what are the laws actually for using it in Michigan? If you live in Michigan, you need to know the specific laws in Michigan. So then practice. I mean, to be good with a gun, if it's going to defend you and not kill somebody who's innocent, you're going to have to practice somewhat regularly, not as much as if you had to learn the piano, which I think is, they recommend 45 minutes a day. You don't have to shoot 45 minutes a day, but I hope to have... Police Chief Ron Hadid of Dearborn on the show in the next couple of weeks. I promised the mayor last week I would, but he was on my list anyway. And one thing I want to talk about is where do the police stand on that, and what even is police training like? Mayor O'Reilly said there's some very good initiatives that have to do with learning and education about when violence is necessary and when there's other alternatives, which I thought was great. So we're going to get more details from Chief Hadid about that. And about gun training, and are they in favor of it? Can they endorse gun ownership for people of Dearborn or not? Interestingly, some police officers recommend it for the public, and others won't take a stand, and others say, like the chief of police of the city of Detroit, when he first got the job in Detroit, coming from, I believe, Cleveland?
Cleveland, yeah.
And I'm sorry, I don't remember his name offhand, but still, he said, I'm all in favor of people lawfully owning guns for protection. And maybe there's a special need there. And so there is difference of opinion on that, but we'll find out more. So I've gone too long on that, but good for the press and guide and going in depth on that. It was actually Dave Herndon of Heritage.com that put that together for all the Heritage papers. But it's good to have that that update. FYI, in Wayne County, there is 115,000 plus people, and they're plus, not negative people, who have those concealed carry licenses, concealed pistol licenses.
And just as an FYI also, there are gun clubs and gun organizations and mm-hmm. conservation clubs that do have these classes for the public to take, and especially if you're involved with scouting or some mm-hmm. other organizations, you know about these and you take them for a nominal cost and not much time.
You certainly should not get a gun without proper instruction, and not just the advice of the salesperson, but the salesperson can help you choose which one would be appropriate for you. For example, if your hands or arms are not very strong, then you don't want a gun with a lot of recoil. You know, I want one of those Dirty Harry specials, 44 Magnum. And, you know, as you fire it once and you break a bone in your arm or you drop the gun immediately, you know. And so that's no good for protection. Also, you probably can't shoot straight on the second shot after the first one had that serious recoil. So if you don't practice, but even if you practice a lot, if you got the wrong gun, it doesn't fit your hand, it doesn't fit your arm strength. So there's a lot of things to consider there. And hopefully people can get along without guns. I really hope so. But certainly never use a gun in an inappropriate way. I think it is a fun sport. I mean, more fun than shooting deer to me, but shooting a target. But nonetheless, to each their own there. Moving on, in the Press and Guide from the 19th Sunday, public talks were held, a thing called focus groups, people, by the company that was chosen by the Dearborn Board of Education to select the next superintendent. And I just saw in that story by Katie Hetrick from, again, Sunday, April 19th, last Sunday, that and the group, by the way, that was chosen is Michigan Leadership Institute. They had 14 sessions throughout one day with people from the community. And it's interesting that Dearborn attorney Tony Guerrero, and yes, he lives in Dearborn, he's an attorney, he ran for judge, 19th district judge here. We interviewed him on the show. He lost. Didn't get the WHFR bump, I guess. but he actually, to my knowledge, his attorney office is in Allen Park. And okay, that's where his office is. But that's no disrespect. And he said the next superintendent has to be a proven administrator, someone with a vision to look down the line. An administrator, I think you can read somebody that knows the budget, who can keep the money equal to the income, equal to the output, or vice versa. Also, of course, people say, like, unfortunately, a former school board member, Hussein Berry, said, you can either go with traditional superintendent or non-traditional superintendent. Well, thanks a lot. Okay. A lot of Dearborn teachers said, well, two who were part of the group, they said the next superintendent should be a former educator. Shouldn't the person who is administering, that is managing, supervising, finalizing goals for education for the district, actually come from an education background? They have a degree in education where you take classes in what is good education and how to design it and how to make it happen. Huh? Yeah, makes sense to me. I've always been in favor of people should be in jobs, in most jobs, where they have a background in that. And well, we'll have to wait on that. Of course, the other comment was, Dearborn is a very diverse community, all different kinds of peoples and groups. And so Fortson Principal Yusuf Musalam said the next superintendent should be able to adapt to the community and the environment, including the diversity within the schools. And businesswoman Margaret Blohm, B-L-O-H-M, said the next superintendent should be aware of the district's aging infrastructure, too, which means all the buildings are getting very old, they're falling apart, and what are we going to do? Are we going to replace them, fix them? That has to be done regularly, of course, or you'll be in the situation we are with the Dearborn Highways. I don't think I mentioned this show yet, but 2 weeks ago, I had to replace two tires in my car, and they were both sidewall blisters, bubbles, is the other colloquial term for them, although there's a lot of other words, like adjectives I could use. Yeah. And they only come from, well, if your tires are brand new, it could come from badly manufactured, but my tires are more than a year old, so it probably wasn't a manufacturing defect, because I know that twice I ran over potholes that were so bad, it sounded like it was tearing the suspension apart. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was not just a tire going thump, it was like metal to metal. And in fact,
springs bouncing,
that sort of thing. One of my rims is dented on the inside a little bit. Mm-hmm. I'm told I have to get that undented somehow. I don't know. Find another pothole somewhere that is the opposite and run the car through there at 50 miles an hour, I guess. However, there's a way to do that. But okay, my little car is kind of a sporty car, and it cost me $500 for two tires.
Wow.
$500. Mm-hmm. So I'm paying the pothole tax, as it's called. I know all about that. But let's go back to the superintendent. So we'll see exactly how they get the best of all possible person for the next superintendent of Dearborn Public Schools. They need them to start by July 1st. And obviously, no matter what you say should be the case, you generally will take the best candidate out of those that apply. So I hope that they get the message out. I think they will, because of all the publicity that we're losing our superintendent, because Brian Whiston is going to be the next state superintendent of education. And that story went everywhere in Michigan. So it was like automatic publicity for everywhere in Michigan, all the other superintendents that were thinking of maybe going somewhere else. Well, I guess I can apply in Dearborn as soon as they're able, you know, because, so I think the word has gone out pretty well to the other superintendents and the other teachers of Michigan that there's an opening, going to be an opening here. And so I bet we'll get a really good bunch and quite a number. I bet we get over 200. What the final number will be in terms of interviewees, it's always a lot less than that, but I think we'll probably have a lot to choose from.
We went through a similar process on Gros Seal. We just hired a new superintendent.
Oh, okay.
And was a former teacher that we hired.
Well, it matches my criteria right there. But
there you go. You know.
Although I have to say, unfortunately, there are some teachers I know who want to become administrators. And the reason is they hate teaching. Well, they won't admit that outright.
No.
But they want to get out of being there in the classroom with the students. And whether or not they're good administrators, that's a separate issue. Whether or not they know anything about good education is another related issue. But you know, I still am a little suspicious of their motivations, is that they're getting out of teaching to become an administrator, not to rise to the next level of helping out education, but and to helping out all the other teachers that they're leaving behind. But it's because they hate teaching. If you hate teaching, probably you shouldn't stay in the system at all. That's my feeling. I have seen close up, I won't say where, although we are here at Henry Ford College, aren't we? A few people that have moved into administration that somewhere, not here necessarily, okay, somewhere, and they hated teaching. And I didn't think they were particularly, although maybe that undercut my view of their performance, I didn't think they were very good administrators. Whether it was because of that or just whatever. Maybe they weren't a very good teacher, they weren't a very good administrator, but somehow they got appointed. But I think that's at least the first criteria you should look for, is background in education. Of course, it's a very small number of students in Gros Seal, right? How many?
We have about 8,000.
8,000? Oh, that's more than I expected.
Oh, 8,000. Okay. I'm sorry, 8,000 population. So
right. The school is only about 1,000,
yeah.
800 to 1,000 kids?
That's close. To,
okay, yeah. That's what I was thinking. But yeah. But you still need, how many high schools? Just one?
One high school.
Just one high school, of course.
And like I said, the new superintendent had been a middle school teacher and also an administrator somewhere else.
That seems like a very controllable situation. I mean, when Brian Winston was in, you know, how many buildings are part of the school system in Dearborn? I think 40 or 50 buildings. I mean, some are maintenance buildings and so on. They weren't all schools. A lot of people to keep. You can't work at the lowest levels. You have to trust a lot of people on down to carrying out their responsibilities in a proper way. But you can almost be a hands-on superintendent in Gros Seal.
I'd say so. I mean, it's
you
only...
know, you can walk around the halls of every building in a couple of hours and just driving from one to the other. But I mean,
two elementary schools.
You might be able to get to know all the teachers and other administrators by first name even. So I think that might be a fun thing to do because you might really be able to make a difference. You can clearly influence from the bottom up. So good luck to him.
Her.
Yeah. Good luck to her. Great. Yeah. All right. We're more than half past here. I'll go quickly and finish up these other stories. We did have, and I just want to give her credit, just mention her name. Kitty Hedrick, also going to the board meeting, mentioned that Julie Jameson, said that she teaches, came to the board, Dearborn Board of Ed meeting, and she teaches 8th grade at Bryant, and her own young children attend Howard Elementary, so she's a Dearborn resident. She counted up and realized that she will lose 16 days of instruction this year because of all the standardized testing. She said, I could do so much with the extra 16 days. My students could do so much more with 16 days. The story goes on to say that count does not include additional time lost to pretest or separate tests given to students who are considered English language learners, she said. Jamison said that she deliberately moved to the Howard Elementary neighborhood so her daughters could attend there, but she is now considering private school when they're older to escape some of the testing. Of course, that's, you know, one of my bugaboos is that the charter schools, private schools, don't have to do so much testing.
No.
So you're either testing everybody or you're not, I think, but oh well. Later in the meeting, Trustee Mariam Bazzi, one of the new people on the board, by the way, asked Superintendent Brian Whiston to get a report to the board looking at the number of days spent on testing by grade. Whiston said the district has a committee looking at the issue. We all agree we are testing too much, he said. And he's going to be the head of the state.
Right, right.
So maybe he'll make some changes statewide if the Republican legislature and the governor allow it, of course. Board President Amy Scholes praised Jamison for framing the issue in easy-to-understand terms. We need people like her to lobby in Lansing because it's hard to get those legislators to understand anything unless it's expressed in the simplest of terms. She didn't say that, but I'm just trying to figure out what she meant by that. My daughter says that all the time, who is also an elementary, well, she's a middle school teacher in Southfield Public Schools, as people who listen to the show regularly know, and she's just fed up with that, that she can't do teaching very much. She's got a lot of great ideas, a lot of important topics in science especially, which is her area. She doesn't have the time to do it because she's forced to both do test prep but also to give the test. And something has to change there. Not against testing, but again, I want to emphasize as a teacher, I know that every test has its biases. Not every test shows every educational achievement or a variety of educational potential. Okay? Counselors or people that know testing know that there's all different ways to test, but the one thing you really find very hard to test is the actual motivation of the student. That is, how much has education changed them to a person that, number one, loves learning and has enough confidence in themselves to do research? And of course, do they know how to do research properly, getting a variety of opinions and ideas, and how can they incorporate it? So that whole process, that whole beginning with the motivation or the inspiration all the way through the research, that's what you need from school. That's what you need to achieve. The information is out there. The truth is out there. You have to find it. And the truth keeps changing in this world. Technology, environmental issues keeps changing so fast that you have to know how to keep up with that. So the real survival skills are not rote learning and of just a quantity of information. Quantity of information that you can memorize used to be a criteria of how smart you are or how much you've learned. It isn't. It shouldn't be anymore. That's my editorial opinion, of course, based on years of teaching and testing. So tests are getting more sophisticated, and they are trying to test some of these factors that are not so easy to test, but it's going to take a while. So congratulations to Julie Jamison, a teacher who stepped forward to try to straighten things out, and we'll see if the new state superintendent is going to invite her to Lansing to testify too, or to walk the halls of Congress. By the way, for those people looking for a field trip, on Saturdays, you can go to our state capitol, Lansing, and they give tours. I don't know if there's a charge. I bet there is. Nothing's for free these days. But they discontinued them because they didn't want those protesters or something up there in the hallways. I don't know. Of course, you can go in the Capitol at any time if you're going somewhere. I bet they have metal detectors on the doors. I bet they do. Bet they have them, yeah. And visit your representatives. I don't think you need an appointment in advance even. So could you take a self-tour, you know, of going in and just walking around? I think you could. Not for certain on that. Certainly, you can fly your gyrocopter anytime you want to Washington, D.C. and land on the White House grounds, apparently, because they can't figure out how to stop you, and they don't know what to do. Totally puzzled. I bet they'll figure out something. I mean, can't they have a gyrocopter that would go up and meet you? And, you know,
they probably will soon.
I mean, it's true. An anti-aircraft missile probably can't shoot down a gyrocopter.
Yeah, it's a little low under the radar.
Yeah, it's very low to the ground. And although, apparently, according to the story I read on that, they actually were tracking it for the last 30 miles. So there's some kind of radar that they were using. Or some guy with his binoculars
good,
was out there.
Very good eyes.
Hey, look, what's that little speck there on? It's getting bigger. Yeah. Whatever. That's crazy. But it's interesting that we'll have to wait to see how that case is going to be adjudicated. He could get 20 years in prison for that, of course. But okay, sentencing. Colonel Petraeus, David Petraeus, right, famous with the Middle East wars and that, he gave state secrets to his then lover to write a glowing biography of him. State secrets. He got off with 2 years probation as of yesterday, I think. And, he's got to pay a $100,000 fine. But, you know, but that's it. 2 years probation only. And then he goes back to getting his full pension and retirement and state secrets. And what did Snowden get? Well, we don't know because they haven't caught him yet. But, big time, shameful. He gave away state secrets. And Petraeus gives away state secrets. And of course, there are state secrets and there are state secrets. I mean, there's some state secrets that are really should be secret. And other secrets, they're not so secret, but they're secret enough to be called secret, I guess. So we've got that problem there. But I want to see, and this guy had no arms, no weapons. He had 435 letters he was going to hand deliver to congressmen to complain about something. Oh. Yeah. And just a protest. You know, but illegal trespassing and so on. And just flying. You can't fly a gyrocopter just anywhere you want to, whether it's the White House that you land at or not. You have to have some sort of licensing, I guess, for that. And he never got a license, but he learned how to fly. He bought a kit. Yeah. He learned to fly. And whoopee, you go to Washington. Okay. Wayne County budget is grim. I wonder if that means they can fix any roads. I didn't read the story, but there it is in the press guide, 419-15 on page 4A. Times-Herald has mentioned there's construction to begin on Warren Avenue. Let's see, everybody living on Warren or wanting to drive up to Warren. It's starting, of course, where? First of all, it's between Telegraph and Outer Drive. So it's pretty much west there. It's not in the downtown area of East Dearborn, but it's between Telegraph Road and Outer Drive. It'll be under construction through July. And Wayne County is going to oversee that whole construction project, resurfacing, adjusting drainage, repairing bridges and concrete curbs, and installation of sidewalk ramps. Whoa. And I haven't driven there, but they say it's in terrible shape. So just so you know, you can't drive west on Warren Avenue to get to Telegraph. You have to turn north or south at Outer Drive. Not a big deal. That's going to be all the month of July. Farmers and Artisans Market got a great story in at their full press release, I think, on page 5A of the Times-Herald. Hope WHFR gets a chance to be out there and broadcast the journal, because that's always fun. We're looking at possible dates for that, but we haven't heard anything back yet. They got a lot planned this year. First of all, it is starting about a month earlier, folks. So if you want to shop there at the Dearborn Farmers and Artisans Market, which is, a project, an outgrowth of the area Chamber of Commerce. It's going to be in the Bryant lot, same place as before, but the rest of that lot is going to be free parking, because there is free parking almost everywhere in West Dearborn again, except for a couple streets that still have parking meters on them the way you have to pay, but a couple of high demand streets they've left a few meters on, but not in that area. So you've got several parking lots, free parking all around there, including the Bryant lot, but I bet that's going to be packed first, of course, because they only have half the lot for the vendors and the other half for parking. But nonetheless, 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Fridays through September 25th. And you know what I think? They started a month earlier, but didn't they go through October last year?
Yes.
Yep. It got pretty darn cold in October, cold. So I think maybe they just decided to move it up and start it earlier. And the weather is still pretty cold, but I've got green things starting to poke out of the ground. So
I see some crocus.
Yeah, by May 9th, it should be is it 9th?
8th.
8th. Yep. By May 8th, it should be nice and warm. And by all means, come on by. Again, Bryan Public Library parking lot, 22100 Michigan Avenue, if you've got to put it in your smartphone or something to find your way around, from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. from Fridays from now on. There's going to be also, in addition to the market, there is a Wine at the Market tent where patrons can sample offerings from Michigan wineries and buy their products. So it's a wine-only tent. I wonder if probably have to show ID or something on that. A new program for kids is called the Power of Produce Kids Club. It will allow children ages 5 to 12 to receive $2 in tokens every week at the market to spend on fresh fruits and vegetables. Children who shop and interact with growers and farmers are able to fully participate in the market.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, it's a great learning experience, too. Of course, your parents probably have to give you the money to buy the tokens. But, you know, they have little snacks. Kids will probably get candy or got some great pastries there.
Great cookies.
But, yeah, great cookies, I know. And they're going to have a bunch of special days. May 8th itself is going to be a flower day, sponsored by English Gardens. Kids Day is June 5th. And get this, it's sponsored by La Fontaine Automotive Group. Yeah. So, Kids Day.
Yep.
Because kids buy a lot of cars.
They will be.
Eventually, yep. I guess. And July 17th is sponsored by Bangkok 96 Thai Restaurant, one of our great local restaurants. Won many, many awards. And Senior Citizens Day, August 21st. And that's sponsored by Henry Ford Village. They know seniors. And Art at the Market, September 18th, sponsored by Village Picture Framing and Art Gallery. I got a few WHFR posters I got to take to them, by the way. Remind me. Okay, so we're getting close. We don't have much time, but 15 minutes to go. John, did you have a big story before we go into my little quickie top four here?
Well, sure. Downriver, we have a big concert coming up with the Downriver Community Band. Mm-hmm. It's called Music of the Galaxy. This band was founded in 1989. And the concert is 3 p.m. May the 2nd on Saturday at the Trenton Village Theater. Tickets are only $12 and can be had at downrivercommunityband.org.
Which theater?
It's at the Trenton Village Theater.
Trenton Village Theater. Located, is that West Road, I'm just guessing, or
no,
somewhere
it's
else?
It's on Jefferson.
Jefferson, right, okay, downtown.
Right on the outside of, I'd say, the southern part of Trenton.
Okay. Outside the southern part of Trenton. Yep. South Trenton.
South Trenton, yep.
Okay. That sounds like fun.
And also, tomorrow marks the opening of the high school rowing season.
Well.
We have the 75th anniversary of the HEBDA Cup tomorrow. 8 to 5 at the Wyandotte Boat Club right on the Detroit River in the middle.
Okay.
And, you know, schools, not only high schools, but there'll be colleges that come and compete as well.
Sure.
You know.
If
very big day.
If there's water, you can row.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
We hope for not as much wind as we've had this
That's
past week.
That's a problem. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I assume a lot of high schools don't have rowing clubs, but it certainly Gros Hill should, right?
Well, we
near the water. And,
well, we row out of the Wyandotte Boat Club.
Yeah, and Wyandotte High Schools are right near the water, but
right.
I assume they might use the boat club, too.
They do, too, and so, Riverview yeah. uses the same one. And,
oh, okay.
And
they got deals with the different schools too.
Well, there's good deals with them, and been doing that for quite a long mm-hmm. time. I mean, before that, the folks would have to go down to E-Course and row before that Wyandotte Boat Club.
Well, of course, that's sort of specialty rowing in little skiffs or something, right?
Well, it's single sculling, it's two man, it's four man, and there's eight man boats as well.
Okay, the boat club. Just wondering here, is it open to the public? Do you have to get a membership?
It's open to the public. There's a bar and a grill up top,
oh.
as well as the boat.
And do they rent regular rowboats? Like,
no, they do not.
Oh, okay.
No.
You got to get serious, or
I mean, there is a canoe and kayak launch in
Okay.
Separate from the, from the boat club.
But you have to bring your own canoe or kayak.
It's true enough. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Well, that's a great fun resource. Something to consider, folks. Get some exercise.
Definitely.
Don't paddle too far out and get real tired. Then you can't paddle back, though. Just remember that. Good principle. And probably recommended, those safety vests.
Always wear
Always.
Safety vests.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Autism Awareness Month, kind of my topics. Almost the end of April, we have been playing the Autism Awareness public service announcement this whole month. One of our former WHFR and Henry Ford College staff members and students here Dennis Brown II has got a column in the paper for the whole month. It was published earlier in the month, but it's still on their website, pressandguide.com. He mentions that he had some issues with his learning abilities and had various counselors through school and so on. But finally, it was 35 before he got finally diagnosed with a mild and high-functioning form of autism called Asperger syndrome. But that was what he has received special training and counseling about since then. And, you know, it just took so long to get that help. So let's be aware of what autism is. It has not been talked about or understood very well. I'd say maybe about 15 years it got in the paper that 15 years ago that 166 kids in the U.S. was diagnosed with some form, some degree of autism. The problem is, of course, besides treatment and proper diagnosis, there's no ultimate cure, but there are ways to assist these people into productive lives. And we don't know the cause, as he says in this article, which I'm looking at right now. Could be certain foods or food preservatives. I've heard about that. Ultrasounds in our atmosphere, or microwave contamination of our environment. Premature birth, genetics, television. That's a kind of radiation too, they think. And pesticides. That's a problem with some of the food, of course, and vaccines, because some vaccines, including all the flu vaccines, have minuscule amounts of mercury, which is a big-time poison. But small amounts supposedly don't hurt too much. Maybe that could be one of the causes of either all of autism or some types of autism. Another factor that came up was maybe oxytocin, which is a hormone used to speed up childbirth. Just remember that proper diagnosis and understanding maybe even support from one of the autism organizations, because they're much needed these days, that support and understanding. Okay. The other A on my list was Armenian genocide. In the time we have remaining, it was just on Democracy Now! Today, the show that always precedes us on Fridays that we've begun running because it's very special and it's great. And you can always catch more episodes Monday through Thursday, in fact, that we're not currently broadcasting, from their website, democracy.org, anytime after 9 a.m., 5 days a week. You can listen that way from your computer. But my problem is that I discovered that President Obama, that is the whole United States, United Kingdom, and Israel do not use the term genocide in regard to this event, which happened 100 years ago and is commemorated on April 24th, that is today. And of course, it's a very sad sort of thing. But Pope Francis calls it genocide. All the other countries of the world call it genocide. And it was the Ottoman Turks in 1915 that killed mostly and primarily untold numbers of Armenians. Now, most all of them, were Christian. But whether it was because of all the Christians they killed or because they were Armenians, looks like the definition of genocide has to hold. Why doesn't the United States, the UK, and Israel call it genocide is because Turkey doesn't like it called genocide. Turkey is still sensitive to that. Okay, some people got killed, but I'm just using my Turkish name. But, there was some Turks that got killed too. So you can't say it was totally genocide. Well, nobody's saying genocide has to be total. Can just be 90% or whatever. And so that's crazy. Mass murder. Call it mass murder. And somebody should take the blame for it after 100 years and be over with it. Okay? But, of course, it does become a Christian versus Muslim, Muslim versus Christian sort of thing, too. Of course, the United States hey, we need those bases in Turkey so we can, you know, send our drones out to Pakistan and elsewhere, and let our airplanes and bombers land there. So we need those bases in Turkey. Oh, by golly. And so we're not going to make them angry at us and therefore kick us out of Turkey when we need that platform to fight terrorism. So we won't call it genocide. Give me a break, huh? That is pretty strange. And you can figure out maybe why Israel, already in the Middle East, and the UK also won't use the term genocide. If Pope Francis uses genocide, that's good enough for me. I'm not even Catholic, so there. Okay. Moving on. We have many. By the way, Armenians are not just in one place somewhere else in the world. They are the most dispersed of all ethnic groups. And there's a lot of a large Armenian community right here in the Detroit area, too, folks. Some of our staff members are. Okay, taxes. Okay. This is Michigan. It's not taxes. Oh, yeah. Nah, no time. Where do your 2014 income tax dollars go? From the Friends Committee on National Legislation, part of the Friends Service Committee, also known as the Quakers. They send this little chart every year. 40% of your federal income tax goes to current and past wars. Okay? So it's either Pentagon and related spending, or interest on debt from past Pentagon spending, or other costs from past wars. 40%. How much to healthcare? 26%. Could we have universal single-payer healthcare that is free prescription drugs, complete coverage for everybody in the United States? Yes. Mm-hmm. We just have to do 10%, like cut our military budget by 25%. And that'd be enough money compared to the cost for universal healthcare at all the other major countries of the world to do that for all of us. Wouldn't that be worth it? Mm-hmm. Rather than killing a lot of people, including innocent people, we kill a few less, and we keep everybody in the United States healthy with a system that is simple and reducing costs, even though some people philosophically in this country don't like it. But it's been proven in other countries of the world to work and be better than the system we have now. So, and what about... energy, science, and the environment. That's only 3%. 3% of our total government budget. What could we do for clean energy so we don't need to be fracking anymore, okay? We don't need natural oil. We don't need gasoline. We're only doing 3% there. We could increase money to energy, science, and the environment 10 times if we didn't do war. Oh, my gosh, imagine how this world would change. Your energy bills will go down, all that clean energy, all that clean environment. Oh, it boggles the mind. And somebody said, well, put the money in education. Well, federal government basically doesn't do that. Yes, it does a few programs that it gives money to schools, but basically it's the states. So, unless you want federal government to pay for public education all the way through higher ed, which is not doing now at all. It's not the way our Constitution is set up. I'm not saying it's good or bad, but there's an awful lot of money, far too much money. 40% of every dollar from that you pay in federal income taxes goes to war. Wrong. John Boehner, though, talking about taxes, just commented yesterday, which is in Bloomberg.com on their website. He says that about 50-50 chance at best that we can do anything about the corporate overhaul, the corporate tax law. Now, I don't know what he's trying to do. He says the challenge here is how do you deal, this is his quote, with 70% of American businesses that don't pay corporate taxes. 70%. Now, again, Republicans always say, oh, we got 35% tax rate for businesses in the U.S. Way too much. We're hurting business. Well, who pays those? Well, some smaller businesses have to. But apparently, if you were in a partnership or what's called an S corporation, those taxes are paid on owners' individual tax returns. And that's 70% of all businesses in the U.S. Now, the other people that pay taxes, I know like GE and a couple other big companies, they get so many tax, there's so many tax loopholes and discounts and credits that they wind up getting money back. Even though they've made billions each year, they get money back. So that, It's not a 35% tax rate. Let's do something horrible. Reduce the tax rate to 28%, and the same as people, the same as individuals pay, and every business and every individual pays the same income tax rate. How do you like that? Well, business would be up in arms. 70% of them say, oh my God, that's a 28% increase in taxes because we aren't paying anything right now. Well, why don't you pay your fair share? Really, if you're a people too, then why don't you pay your fair share as a people? Mm. I'm making a joke there, but okay. 3 minutes left. This is tough. I've got all these stories in front of me.
Hairspray.
Well, okay. Yeah. Hairspray starts this next weekend.
This weekend.
Where is the poster? We put it on the door. Okay.
April 24th and 25th.
Right. We had the great interview here 2 weeks ago with Diane Massanelli, who's the choreographer for Hairspray. And here at Henry Ford College, theater department puts on Hairspray tonight, tomorrow night, and Sunday, 8 o'clock, 8 o'clock, and 2 p.m. And again, next weekend, 8, 8, and 2, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So come on by and go to the Adria Auditorium in the Fine Arts Center here on the main campus of Henry Ford College. Hairspray, very important to sneak in before our podcast ends. Here's an idea about taxes, though. And sometimes I've talked about the fair tax, and I don't think that's too fair right now. But what about, just to make it simple, because the big problem is that according to the National Taxpayers Union, a nonprofit group, compliance, that is, putting together your taxes and paying your taxes, and it was figuring out your taxes and submitting your taxes, it costs the whole country in productivity and out of pocket, you know, paying your tax person or the software, a total of $234 billion. Now, if we didn't have to do income tax preparation in this way, with all the rules and exceptions and it's so complicated, we could save for the country and ourselves individually, because we're the country, aren't we? $234 billion. So compliance is the worst part of the federal income tax. So one alternative is, and maybe you never thought about it, a national sales tax. Okay? And what would that be? Well, they estimate that without the fair tax prebates, as they were called, what's going to have to happen is maybe about 25% increase in a tax, a national sales tax, on everything that you buy. There could be exceptions or exemptions for food or healthcare or something like that, but then you go crazy because the tax for everybody else has to go up more if you have some exemptions. But they think that if they ever brought that about, they want to make sure, first of all, the people that want the national sales tax, that they repeal the 16th Amendment, which says the income tax is good. So you want to get rid of the income tax once and for all, the way it's done now. And then, of course, you've got to raise money somehow.
Yeah.
So then you put in either the national sales tax or the fair tax. But the problem is, of course, poor people have to pay that tax.
They're going to pay the tax.
So, and it's a higher percent of their budget than it is for richer people.
For anybody else.
Right. Also, seniors who are on limited income, they're going to not like that so much. So that's the problem, actually, as I discovered with the fair tax, which I almost sounded like I was endorsing for a couple of years. But we've got to come up with something. At least we'd save that $234 billion, and there would be no withholding on your money. So who cares if you're paying 25 cents additional on the dollar? If you're getting every penny of the money you've earned, there's no withholding. Mm-hmm. There's no withholding. So you're getting like 25% more every